I have talked on a few shows about reading ingredient labels. Do you do that? Have you started doing that after listening to a show about doing that? This is, in part, a show about those few states that are banning particular food additives. It's also a show about at least one guy representing big confection that wants no part of that. That's no surprise, really. His reasons might not even be a surprise. What might at least get a Spock eyebrow lift will be how he thinks of his customers. Do you think of Big Confection as a faceless, nameless entity? Well, at least now it has a name, at least one name, and I'm going to give it to you. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 282, Food and Freedom Once a Week for Life. Hello folks, Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the program. My many years of cooking did not prepare me to study food package labels for things I ought not to eat. Being a dad and an attentive home cook has done that. I'm that guy who dares to do his own research. If you've been paying attention these last few years, you know that in some realms, that's frowned upon. I'm going to show you there's at least one more realm you may never have considered that wants you to do only nothing but comply. For you English majors, yes, I know that was a badly constructed sentence. I subscribe to a few food emails. One email had an article about the California bill to ban four specific food additives. Back in episode 278, I addressed some of this concern. There's a bit more to reveal about the bills. What became interesting as I started digging into the article was that I found some rabbit holes, and then the issue blew up into complicated and complex issues and politics, both governmental party politics and individual conviction politics. With this came misinformation disguised as a difference of opinion. The reason it's misinformation is the person with the opinion has some letters after his name, some credential. Now, the whole misinformation thing is probably a good topic for another show, but not this one, not today. Today, I want to talk you through the article. Well, there was more than a few, but I'm going to focus mainly on one, maybe two, that I read and where I ended up just by following the writing. Now, this might be a good place to sidebar that no article can be thorough. At some point, the reader has to fill in the blanks by digging deeper. The source article, the one that started this journey, was written by Elizabeth Flood on April 4, 2024, and posted on the fooddive.com website. The opening paragraph gives a good clue about where this article is going. She writes, quote, "Food industry executives argue their proposals lack scientific standing and could wreak havoc on the industry, while opponents link consumption of the food substances to serious health problems," end quote. Food execs argue that can't be good for the consumer. They argue there isn't scientific standing. This is going to be slightly relevant later for dismantling the argument, such that it is. Now, I'm not going to get deep into it, but I will bring it up. Elizabeth offers the necessary reminder information that several states, California, Missouri, Washington, Illinois, and New York, are writing or have written legislation banning bromated vegetable oil, potassium bromate, propylparaben, and red dye number 3. She also offers that erythrosine, red dye number 3, is banned in the European Union, Japan, China, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand. Red dye number 3 is a petroleum derivative, so of course it has to be healthy. Rabbit hole number 1. Elizabeth quotes Chris Gindelsberger, a senior vice president of public affairs and communication at the National Confectioners Association, in an interview Food Drive conducted with him. He stated, quote, "There's been a flurry of activity in certain states, but there's only one law in the books, and in fact, more states are walking away from this baseless, emotionally driven campaign that lacks scientific backing," end quote. So, of course, I had to find this Chris guy. That's a very bold statement. Baseless and emotionally driven campaign. I checked. Foodsafety.com posted an article that refuted the idea that the claims are baseless. They write, quote, "Multiple studies have demonstrated red dye 3 to cause cancer in animals at high levels. Other studies have shown that red dye 3 and other artificial food dyes may lead to hyperactivity and other neurobehavioral effects in children. CR has also highlighted FDA's own findings indicating that U.S. children ages 2 to 5 consume twice as much red dye 3 per body weight than the general population," end quote. Now, not all states are on board with banning these chemicals. Indiana, Maryland, South Dakota, Washington, and West Virginia rejected proposals to ban food additives. Kentucky went as far as saying that food additive decisions should be made at the FDA level. Gindelsberger agrees, quote, "Our position is that the FDA should be making these decisions, not people who can't sleep and are Googling things in the middle of the night," end quote. In other words, you are too stupid to know what's good for you. Listen to your overlords. Gindelsberger's job is to advocate for the chocolate, candy, gum, and mint manufacturers. His chief complaint is retooling to meet the proposed requirements will be too costly to the industry. He offers this, quote, "We're going to end up with a state-by-state patchwork of laws that do a couple of things. Increased food costs, create mass confusion for consumers, and reduce and decay consumer confidence in our food safety system," end quote. Well, once again, you are too stupid. You are so stupid. You can't read a label. So just trust the manufacturer to know what is best for you. Decay in the food safety system and the trust in manufacturers seem to be tanking. And they really have themselves to blame for that. That's a good thing from where I sit, since it requires the industry to earn back the trust through better practices. Well, geez, can't have that. It seems Gindelsberger prefers the special pleading for the industry to be held unaccountable. When people vote with their dollars, that's the real impact. By people, I mean you sleepless folks with nothing better to do than Google ingredients at 3 o'clock in the morning. It seems informed consumers are what the industry wants to avoid. Rabbit hole number 2. If they do away with red dye number 3, what will they replace it with? That's always a good question to ask. Is the cure worse than the disease? What is the substitute for the thing we already have? There is a better than even chance you are already eating the substitute if you consume commercial yogurt, maybe some popsicles, maybe some candies, maybe some baked goods. The color, which can vary from pink to lavender, comes from cochineal. I will admit I probably don't know how to pronounce that, but that's how I'm going to keep saying it. So, comes from cochineal. Okay, so what? What the heck is cochineal anyway? Good question. In short, bugs. Specifically, quote, cochineal, parenthesis, Dactylopius coccus, end parenthesis, are immobile scale insects native to tropical and subtropical South America as well as Mexico and Arizona. These insects live on the pads of prickly pear cacti, feeding on the plant's moisture and nutrients, end quote. Did you ever think about the first person to eat a mushroom or a crayfish? What must have been the circumstances behind looking at those scaly insects and thinking, hey, we can make food coloring out of that? Proponents of cochineal coloration will point out that color for fabrics from cochineal is almost an ancient practice. That same scaly bug is used to create food color in two ways. Cochineal extract and carmine, which is carminic acid that has gone through a laking process. I looked that up, laking process, and I can't repeat what I read because I don't understand it. It's a process. That's about all I can say for certain, and that's the only part that I understand. Plainly, color from bugs is as old as time. That's no big deal. What seems a big deal with the timing is the demand from at least one German billionaire that you will eat bugs and you will be happy. It's probably more Schultz than Schwab, but anyway. Perhaps it was my internal monologue reading more glee into the article favoring bugs for food coloring than was actually there. But it did really seem optimistic, like this was a really great substitute. One unexpected impact on cochineal is price instability. It turns out the bugs, being parasites, can harm the host if they are not effectively managed, which means scraped off. Cochineal can also be impacted by weather and, quote, other issues, quote, but those other issues were never really identified. Rabbit hole number three. Chris Gindelsberger seems to reject that there is a legitimate health issue with red dye 3. He seems to also reject that there's a health crisis in the U.S. This topic goes well beyond only food additives. Food additives are a consideration in the health issue, but not the only one. There is the added sugar in many foods. The abundance of calories in many restaurant meals and the proliferation of processed foods in the stores at price points favorable to consumers. A lot is going on all at the same time. Chris is fond of focusing on the calories. I've read a few of his articles and listened to him on a debate called The Truth About Diabetes, presented by the BBC. Now, it's more than a few years old, but I'm pretty sure he and the guest debaters haven't really changed their positions. They might have, I don't know. His focus remains only on the calories, not the source of the calories. Too many calories is the issue, and his solution is for the industry to make smaller portion packages of the same poison products. He is starting to sound like one of those profits over people kind of folks. One bright spot of that debate was Dr. Asim Malhotra, who rightly understands that food is medicine and that the right food choices can fix what the wrong food choices caused. Just to hear Dr. Malhotra kind of smack down Chris was was worth listening to. It was good. It was enjoyable. It's a breath of sanity in the debate. This rabbit hole goes a long way and has many, many tunnels. It's also a pretty good illustration that one problem, food additives or diabetes, is not a standalone issue. Somewhere along the way in commercial food production, someone decided petroleum-based food additives were a good idea. If you're getting ahead of me about medicine and medical schools, it might be the same guy or guys. If I've gone too fast, that was Rockefeller. There's more to this episode. There's more than this episode can handle to discuss the medical schools and the Flexner Report, but it's also well worth finding that information. You probably think that's crazy talk. No one rich man could alter medical schools all by himself. Why, that's nuts. The main points as I see them are these. The more processed the food, the better it is to avoid it. Now, I know that term, process, is by itself even a bit sticky. Butchering is processing. Processing is transforming something mostly inedible into something edible. So the butcher has the whole animal or half of an animal, and as that is, not much you can do with it. So you have to process it, and that means cutting, fabricating that. In butcher talk, it is subprimals into primals, primals into subprimals into ultimately edible portions, something like steak. Butchering is an age-old skill. It is processing. What I mean by processing is taking a bunch of ingredients, maybe none of them actually found in nature, and combining them in a way to make something loosely called food. Twinkies. The more it starts to look like something Walter White might have concocted, the more you should avoid it. Feel free to yell at Jesse. Calories as the only metric of food consumption is going to give you bad information. You can eat your daily caloric intake in Skittles and donuts and not actually ever eat food. I read somewhere that food has gone up so much that the grocery bill for the average household has increased by $11,000. It sure feels like it. I don't know if that's actually true as far as a dollar amount, but that groceries have gone up more than a little bit is plain to anybody who shops. That means food purchasing decisions get more restrictive, and the cheap stuff is usually the crappy stuff. There are maybe a dozen different actions in play that lead to frustration in the grocery store and at the checkout. I usually shop at three different stores just to get the best prices. I'm in grocery stores a lot, so I know who has the best deals on the particular things I want to buy. Not everyone has multiple grocery stores to compare. It takes time to do that. It takes gas to do that. And I'm still more than certain food additives made from petroleum are not what I want in my food at any price. I mean, I've even not purchased dog food because it had canola oil in it. And I stood there in the aisle and yelled at the company. They didn't hear me. Garbage in food means poor human health. And I will be plain. Canola oil and all the other seed oils and all of these additives that California and those other states are trying to ban is garbage. And there's a lot more than just that. Garbage in food means poor human health. Not tomorrow. A King Don today probably won't hurt much. But King Don's for breakfast every day for a year is going to leave a mark. Ingredients are cheaper than ready-to-eat foods or even packet foods that maybe, you know, heat and eat. I know that opens a whole new set of time trouble and skill issues. There is no perfect solution to a very imperfect problem. What is very clear is thinking the agent of the empire, the FDA, is going to make decisions good for you is folly. That's not going to happen. Now, this is a great place, by the way, to pitch my cookbook, One Pot Meals You Can Make. Now, I'm risking getting didactic, which I wish to avoid. Just to spite big confection, read those labels and Google the ingredients. The FDA seems only slightly concerned about your health and wellness, but I still say they mostly hate you. Now, big food and big confection seem to as well. The diabetes issue isn't specifically a food additive issue, but the foods with those additives are also, generally, high in sugar, which is a main source of the diabetes problem. Big confection and big pharma don't want you to know that you can impact your health for the better by eating different food, which means actually eating food. They want you to keep spending your cash on pretty colored poison and then, here, take a pill, take two, take 10. It seems like a big step from a bill in one state to ban four particular food additives. Now, California might do a lot of things badly, but they seem to have this one right. States should make the decision for the citizens, and you, Joe or Joan citizen, also have an obligation at the grocery aisle to make good purchasing decisions within the confines of all the things that are going on, and most particularly, spendable cash. Now, of course, we prefer states make those decisions for the citizens in interest for their health, wealth, and happiness. It doesn't always work out that way. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll add the text of the show to the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/282, as well as a couple of links from what I read. I'll add the debate link. Because that was, it's a little less than an hour. Even though I think it might be 8 or 9 years old, I don't think too very much has changed. And based on some of what I read about from Chris, he hasn't changed at all. He probably gets paid very well not to change. So that, whatever, that's how that goes. And then that's it. So have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.